360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
It is Friday morning. It is time for The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. From residential, commercial to project management, they cover all aspects of construction. And joining us in the studio this morning, Robin Lamley. Good morning to you, Robin.
Good morning, Katie.
The member for Araluen. And we'll talk about, you know, the fact that you're an independent.
I'm very independent these days.
We've got Leah Finocchiaro, the opposition leader. Good morning to you, Leah.
Good morning, Robin. I think it depends what side of the bed you get out on, doesn't it?
No.
Please
say hello.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Well, yeah, we finished Parliament last night. We just, you know.
Oh, calm down.
No, don't calm down. And Natasha Files, the Health Minister, and, the Minister for National Resilience, which I guess we all understand now what that means with the Aussie expats arriving today.
Good morning, Katie. Good morning, listeners. Yeah, it's a significant day for the Territory and for Darwin. That flight will arrive around lunchtime, I understand, and these are people that really, through no fault of their own, have been caught up overseas. This first flight arrives from London, but we'll see future flights from South Africa and India getting some of these thousands of Aussies that have been caught up overseas home.
And it sounds as though, or certainly looks as though, there are quite a number of safeguards in place, as we would imagine. We've even got a situation where they're going to be wearing those armbands that are going to be monitoring your oxygen saturation and all sorts of things.
Yes, Katie. So in terms of making sure that the Northern Territory's interests come first, that the health and safety of Territorians, and of course making sure that there's no impact to Territory taxpayers, has been our first priority. The Commonwealth Government are providing the funding to the Territory Government and the National Critical Care and Trauma Response Centre. They'll be wearing technology, their armbands with a little device on them that doesn't track where they are, but what it does is it provides vital health information back to the telehealth professionals that will be monitoring them. And this has been used in Hong Kong and Singapore, and they look at oxygen saturation levels, their temperature, their heart rate. And it's been shown that even, some hours, up to 48 hours before someone starts to become unwell, there's some signs that they can pick up. So then we could isolate that person and start to do some clinical work.
And so arriving on that flight today, what time did you say?
I understand it arrives about lunchtime. I know that there's probably quite a few plane spotters that will be keen. So I understand that it'll land just before midday today, that 787 Qantas aircraft.
And about 160 passengers, including 22 kids?
Yeah, so there's, Katie, some heartbreaking stories where children have been overseas being cared for by grandparents. Coronavirus has broken out, and obviously flights, you know, immediately became quite difficult to get home. And I think people just thought, well, this will pass in 2 months, 3 months. No one, I think, thought that it would go on like it has, in the sense. So people thought that they would just safely wait it out wherever they are. And some 6 to 8 months later, they're still stuck. So the Australian government have worked with Qantas. These are commercial flights. People pay for them. They also pay a quarantining fee, but the federal government is subsidising that.
I think what's really important is that the Territory recognise the role it's playing in our nation, and we've done that right from the start, and that's to a tremendous credit to Territorians who had trust in the government to first take that first ship of people, and then, of course, where we are today. But questions still remain unanswered about the rave party from a couple of weeks ago, and we certainly asked this in Parliament of you, Natasha, and just information isn't forthcoming. People just need to have confidence that what's going on at Howard Springs is working. It's proven to be highly successful, and the staff out there are doing an amazing job. But we've seen what's happened in Victoria with problems in quarantine. Quarantine is very serious, and now we're bringing home Australians from overseas. We need to know, what were the problems? How did the rave party come about? What system broke down that could allow that to happen? And what have you done as Health Minister to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Oh, Katie, I think that's an insult to the professionals running that facility. We have repatriated hundreds of people from
overseas.
It's absolutely
not an insult. They're doing an amazing job.
It is an absolute insult.
There was clearly a breakdown. There was clearly a breakdown. For a rave party to take place, something didn't work. Now, what has your government done to ensure that that type of thing doesn't happen again?
There wasn't a rave party. There was a TikTok video for a few moments. It's under police investigation. But what I can say is that we've quarantined hundreds of people. Our system is the gold standard. This is why the Commonwealth have come to us and said, actually, rather than other jurisdictions, we want to use your facility and your National Critical Care and Trauma Response Centre. And in terms of information, we have provided information. There was a briefing to the opposition and independent members offered this week.
Not about the rave party.
The question was raised, and I don't want to be rude that you weren't there, but that was discussed at that briefing.
I think this is great. This is great for the Territory. It's a new industry. It's a bit of a bizarre new industry, yeah. But any industry at this point is good news. Congratulations to the Territory Government and the Federal Government for having the foresight to locating this in Darwin, and bring it on.
And just to reassure Territorians, Katie, there's thousands of beds out there. There is still the state-based hotspot quarantining. We've seen, obviously, hotspots coming off, but we could declare more at any point. There's still beds reserved for that. We've still got a hot zone where we can deal with people that are infected that might not need to be in a hospital. So it's not like we're suddenly forgetting about Territorians. At the forefront of this planning is Territorians and what their needs might be.
And my understanding out at that facility is there is a heck of a lot of space. So there's obviously, it's not like in those hotels in Victoria where people are really sort of, you know, room right next to each other. There is more space there. Where are we at in terms of the research into, you know, do we know any more at this point in time as to whether the heat and the humidity that we've got here in Darwin particularly plays a part in sort of killing off or not allowing the spread of COVID?
Katie, just the first point you made there, that's why this facility is so perfect, is because there's no lifts, there's no corridors. It's actually far more comfortable for people because they can have a little balcony where they can have some space. They're not stuck in a hotel room. In terms of the heat, there is some more emerging evidence. I think it's unknown, but there seems to be, I heard reports earlier in the week that the virus doesn't like the heat. So I don't know the research around that. It can live for up to 9 hours, apparently, you know, on things. So a door handle, yep, for example. So maybe it doesn't like the heat and it doesn't live for as long.
Well, but I tell you what, yeah, if it really doesn't like the heat, the Northern Territory could find itself in a very
place. Because yeah, exactly. 30 degrees in Catherine already. They're never getting coronavirus.
What I think is ironic, though, is probably less than 6 months ago, INPEX handed over that facility to the Northern Territory government, and there was this sort of flurry of what are we going to do with it? And all of a sudden, bang, it's in full demand.
Exactly what we're doing with it.
It's become incredibly useful. Yeah. Well, look, let's move along because there is so much to cover off on this morning. And one thing that I really do want to talk about is the issue with crime in Alice Springs. We know that family and friends are mourning the tragic loss of popular Alice Springs man Shane Powell after his life support was turned off yesterday. It is reported that the 47-year-old suffered brain injuries following an alleged hit and run in Alice Springs last Thursday. He was then flown to Adelaide Hospital, the Royal Adelaide Hospital, in a critical condition last Friday after he was hit while riding his motorcycle by an allegedly stolen car that was driven through a red light at the Larapinta intersection. Now, we've spoken about the situation, obviously, in Alice Springs on numerous occasions. There is no doubt that there are some real issues in Alice Springs when it comes to crime. I want you to just take a listen to Greg Neck, a long-term Alice Springs resident who spoke to us a little bit earlier in the week. Take a listen to what he had to say.
It's something that I think a lot of locals have come to. It's just part of normal everyday living here in Alice Springs. It's just absolutely crazy. And you know, I've lived here for 66 years, and you know, I absolutely love the place. I still love Alice, but this is the worst I've seen it. And it's been building up over a number of years. Number of factors contributing to it, but you know, I think just the break and entry into residential and commercial. You know, the property damage, both to residential and commercial. The number of vehicles stolen is just crazy at the moment. The antisocial behaviour here in Alice Springs is just terrible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the town looks terrible. It looks messy. It's the topic of conversation wherever you meet someone, whether you're doing shopping or you're down the street or out playing golf. Everyone talks about this problem in Alice Springs, and it just keeps going on from day to day. It gets worse and worse, and there's nothing happening.
Now, Greg spoke to us earlier in the week. His pioneering father, Murray Neck, passed away a couple of weeks ago. As I understand it, a couple of days after he passed away, Greg had also told us that there was then a situation where people had tried to break into his home when they knew that nobody was there because his father had passed on. I think that we all realise that this issue in Alice Springs is obviously, it's reached the point of break, I think, for the residents there. I really feel for you guys, Robin. This is something that, you know, that you've been speaking to us about for an awfully long time.
It's devastating, Katie. It's really, really upsetting for everyone. The whole town will be in mourning, and it really has reached a tipping point. I asked the Chief Minister a question. I got very upset yesterday. I asked him a question, pretty much, what are you going to do? What Alice Springs people want is for members of this government, the Chief Minister and his ministers, to come down to Alice Springs, to look at them and work with them. What we heard yesterday was the usual list of all the things that this government says they've done for Alice Springs in trying to address the law and order problem. It's just not good enough, Katie. It's not working. And for many, many months, if not years, people have been saying someone is going to die. And someone has died. And it's time for this government to take a step back and think about the people of Alice Springs. We need you. Natasha, we need you. We need Michael Gunner. We need your colleagues to come down and talk to us and really be a part of the solution. I'm not hearing that. All I'm hearing is this hubris rhetoric about how good we are and what we've done. Well, you haven't been that good and you haven't done enough.
And, you know, I think that I reckon at this point in time, the thing is with Alice at the moment, like, Robin, I can see that you're actually emotional about this. You are actually, it's a tough situation for the residents of Alice Springs. And I reckon this is one of these topics now that we've reached a point where it's become an issue that I think politics needs to be set aside and we actually all have to come together. You know, we on this show, we don't broadcast to Alice Springs, but we've got people who actually call this show about this very concern because it's gone beyond the Berrima line, well and truly. You know, like, it's become a really big issue for all Territorians, I think, to sit up and listen and take note of.
And people, Katie, in Alice Springs feel forgotten by the Gunner government. You know, whenever I'm down there, people are just so angry. They're so disappointed at how their town, at how they're feeling about their town, about how the town's looking. I mean, when you're walking down the mall and shops have got wooden boarded up windows, when people do not go out at night, when people are scared about having rocks thrown through their car windows, their homes broken into. This has been a major problem for years. The Gunner government keep talking about what they are doing. They're not addressing that's not working and that something different needs to be done. They're not acknowledging that there needs to be a community-driven solution across the territory and particularly in places like Alice Springs. And, you know, these systemic policy failures are resulting in devastating impacts to that community. And so tragically, someone has now lost their life. And it was discouraging yesterday not to see the government take a change of pace and not acknowledge that something different needs to be done. And I think that's a huge problem going forward, unless the Gunner government are going to realise that they need to do something differently. I mean, there was a lot of talk yesterday about bipartisanship. Now, from our side of the fence, we are always happy to work with government. We put forward ideas all the time, but government bat them away and double down on their own policy platform. If they truly want to be bipartisan, they are the ones who need to open their arms and start looking to what others in the chamber and other members of parliament are offering.
Katie, it's an absolute tragedy, and our thoughts are with the family and the friends and the community. And Robin, we could clearly see that yesterday, you know, when you asked that question of the Chief Minister, and he certainly expressed his absolute sympathy. And we're right, we do have to do something different, Katie. But what it is we absolutely have the police resources and the CCTV resources. The police force have placed a special task force down there at the moment, and there's some additional resources. But it's when Leah talks about community leadership, it's working with community, it's making sure that these families have the support. It's not just one solution, it's the housing. And we heard last night in the debate in the chamber, the member for Namajira and the member for Goyja talking about the leadership and particularly the Aboriginal community leadership. We've just had our first Aboriginal liaison officer squad graduate in the southern region. And so this is, you know, one of the things that we will do. Kate Warden, the Minister for Territory Families, not all of these young people are in the care of Territory Families, but she's also got the urban housing portfolio. She's spent some significant time down there. I've been down there recently, but her time, she was very much out working with those community organisations, the council, all those parts to the puzzle around how we can have a cohesive approach. And these are difficult issues to work through. These young people, you know, there is trauma involved. There is, and, you know, a number of issues. It's not just simply do this and it will
be fixed. And I guess the thing that I always go back to is when we up here in the top end felt as though there was a real issue with youth crime as well. And we all understand that there's obviously got to be...
We saw a similar incident in Palmerston in 2015.
Well, and that's it. There's always got to be changes. We all understand, you know, generational changes. But in the meantime, there cannot be a situation where innocent people in Alice Springs are at risk. They're actually in danger. You know, their homes are being broken into, the businesses are being damaged, and, you know, the police cannot stand outside every single business. They cannot be absolutely everywhere. We all understand that, but, you know, it's evident to me from what I'm hearing and what I'm being told, and I'm not there, so I don't know, I'm not seeing it firsthand, but from what I'm being told, it has reached the point where things are well and truly broken.
Katie, the solutions have to come from the community. We hear the government solutions, and I'm not sure that they are truly entrenched and connected to the community. Look, Natasha, I will stand next to Michael Gunner and your government in a sign of bipartisanship in front of the people of Alice Springs to try and work through this. But until you face us down there, you are going to be smashed by the Alice Springs community after what's happened yesterday. They will not forgive you until you stand in front of them and eye them off and listen to them. It really has reached a crisis point, and I can't see any other solution apart from your government providing us the leadership we need as a whole community, not just government, a whole community. We've got Aboriginal leaders in Alice Springs at the moment that want to be a part of the solution, standing up like I've never seen them stand up before. Only you have the resources and the power to provide that leadership that we need.
And that's what Minister Warden, she spent significant time on the ground, because you've got non-government agencies that
she
provide
services.
She spent
3 days on the ground, Natasha.
But
she
I guess the point that Robin's making is, will you now, you know, will you guys go down there? I mean, really, I'm surprised that the Chief Minister's not on a plane to Alice Springs this weekend. And I don't mean that in a nasty way or anything. I don't know what his itinerary or what his life, you know, what he's got planned, but I think that, you know, what's happened now with the death of this innocent person is it has shown, I think, Robin, you make a very good point, that the community needs to see that there is a real bipartisan approach here and that everybody's standing together to try and sort things out.
And that was the point I was making, Katie, because what we saw an incident, tragic incident in 2015 at Lambrick Avenue in Palmerston, and it was just absolutely horrible. Someone passed away there. But getting those community organisations who provide those programs on the ground, getting education involved. But when I talk about the housing, it's understanding, you know, why are children not attending school? Is it because of the housing situation? It's all these complex
absolutely
factors. But the work
that
Kate is doing
absolutely
is on the ground, understanding where the communication is breaking down. Well, but certainly police have responded in terms of those resources.
I've got a message here from Gons, and it says, Katie, is the Territory Government going to change the youth bail laws, as has just been done in Queensland? I'm not sure if that's the case.
I was going to say, the government's also got to acknowledge its policy failures that have driven Alice Springs to this point. I mean, we've seen the erosion of consequences through changes to the Youth Justice Act, changes to bail laws, removing breach of bail condition as an offence. This government's taken a really permissive approach to dealing with crime, and until they start to acknowledge that they've got to deal with offending at the pointy end as well as all of the work at the beginning. Of course, we want young people to have the best opportunity in life, and that comes back to a number of factors, including housing and all of the things that Natasha's talking about. But there is also a cohort who are offending and causing chaos in our community, and that's not acceptable. And this government needs to send that message, and that's part of the desperation of people in Alice Springs, is they feel so forgotten by the government. You know, they get these fleeting visits and then nothing happens. You know, the Chief Minister was down there a couple of weeks ago, and my understanding is people in Alice Springs have not heard anything as a result of that visit.
The police minister was there a couple of weeks ago. She slipped in and slipped out. Look, and the other thing that's on the horizon for Alice Springs is on Monday we have the verdict from the magistrate over what's going to happen with the Rolfe case. So you've got two situations boiling in Alice Springs and literally ready to explode.
Robin, are you worried about what's going to, what the result? I mean, regardless of what the result is on Monday, are you worried?
Yeah. Worried sick. Like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, goodness me, Robin.
And Katie, we certainly, like it's these are difficult issues and I acknowledge, you know, everybody's views. It's about coming together in a cohesive approach and it's you know, a community is grieving right now and we can see that. Now, absolute thoughts are with everybody in that community and it's about what can we do together stepping forward. We, as I said, there's no silver bullet for us. If there was a silver bullet, someone would have put it in place a long time ago. It's working through these issues. It's making sure government agencies are working together. It's making sure those NGOs and it's making sure that that community has the voice.
But it shouldn't have got to this. You had been called upon by members of parliament and by the community
happened when your government was in 2015.
Okay, this is not the time to blame.
And you're the one that just went straight political just then. So that's why I'm calling you out on it. You did. You just came in and you went political.
Things have deteriorated over the last few years.
Under different governments.
Natasha.
Under your watch.
People, the escalation has been happening and people have been crying out for a response.
I've got to say, you know, Robin, I've known you for a number of years and I've actually never seen you so upset about something. I've never seen you so emotional about something, which really indicates to me that even you, as a, you know, as a person who's lived in Alice Springs for an awfully long time, is feeling really, really distressed by the way that things are in Alice at the moment. Now, you're a pretty tough woman. I know that from my dealings with you.
I am tough.
And it certainly indicates to me that people are, you and other members of the community are feeling really upset by the way that Alice Springs is going at the moment. And it seems to me that something's got to change. And I'm worried about what's going to unfold as well, following on from the outcome on Monday. So we will keep a very close eye on it and we'll talk more about it.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is The Week That Was. And joining me in the studio this morning, Robin Lamley, Leah Finocchiaro and Natasha Files. Now, look, there is a lot to cover off on this morning, but I do want to go to the changes to the Scrutiny Committee. We've spoken about this throughout the week. The changes which the Gunner government's pushing through Parliament will abolish the Scrutiny Committee, which was set up back in 2016 to enhance transparency and accountability. The opposition and Independents were fuming throughout the week, I'm not sure whether those feelings have subsided in any way, Leah.
I'm still fuming. It's outrageous, Katie. I mean, this government came to power in 2016, promised to be open, transparent, and accountable. They wanted to reform our democracy and learn the lessons of the previous government and all this stuff. They created a committee of the parliament, which was a government majority committee, asked them to make a report on how we open the parliament to the people. That report very clearly said we need to have a legislative review committee, a committee that looks at legislation and then reports back to the parliament. That was established. We've operated under that model for 3 odd years now. And then all of a sudden we come into this parliament and the government decides, well, hang on a second, we don't like the level of scrutiny that provides, and they abolish it.
Leah, why does it matter so much to Territorians? I mean, Filesy, you told me yesterday that 90% of the legislation that went through that scrutiny committee didn't see any change. Leah, why does it even matter?
So it matters because it gave people an opportunity to participate in the legislative process in a formal and structured way. So what it meant is that legislation went off, submissions would be called, so anyone could make a submission about what they think about the legislation, good, bad or otherwise. The committee could then decide to have a public hearing, and that way people could come in, live stream, understand the legislation, have their say. And then the committee, which was a membership of all members of the parliament, not just government, could advise the government on recommended changes. Now, it was up to the government whether they accepted the changes, and a lot of cases they didn't. But it gave a transparent process of, well, this is what the law should be, and you're going ahead and doing it a different way. And this is what stakeholders say, yep. And you're going ahead and doing your own thing. So it's not about, you know, the government's been very cute this week in trying to say it's a lack of confidence by me and my team. Absolutely wrong. As members of parliament, we all have an obligation to review legislation, to connect with our community, and to do that important stakeholder stakeholder engagement. But a formal process of the parliament like this is critical. And let me just say, Katie, in Australia, there is no other jurisdiction that doesn't have a review mechanism for legislation. You either have two houses of parliament, yep, or if you're Queensland and ACT, you have a legislative review committee. So we are out on our own now. Yeah. We've been down a good path, and now we're back on the old path.
Well, look, I guess what I probably don't understand the scrutiny committee as well as what what others will, and certainly the members of parliament that were on those scrutiny committees. But the thing for me, from a real outsider's perspective, that always sparks my concern is that when the government sort of starts to do something without notifying people or without really giving any indication that they're going to do it, and then you arrive in parliament and these changes look as though they're set to get into play, it always sort of makes me go, hang on a second, why are they pushing this through?
And it came with a whole bunch of other changes. So on Wednesday, question time used to be all non-government questions. That means that for one whole hour, the opposition and independent members could question the government. What Natasha's done this week and the government's done this week is make it so that that's gone, and now government members can ask themselves questions in parliament. Now, what a ridiculous system where you can have government members asking themselves questions. It's just to pat each other on the back. There are plenty of other mechanisms in the parliament to talk about yourselves, or you could just ask yourselves in your meeting before you come into parliament, hey, minister, what's this? Not to mention we've changed estimates from 6 days to 4 days. We didn't have the government wouldn't allow this week for the opposition to have its business day on Wednesday. So the first order of business of this government has been to erode scrutiny in four or five different areas.
Yeah, look, I thought the introduction of the scrutiny committees was fantastic. I thought it was one of their better achievements over the last 4 years. It really did transform the way the parliament worked. It included people. People were consulted. They could go along to hearings. They could write submissions. The legislation that came before the committees, and that was most legislation, was scrutinised, analysed. It was really good. A lot of work, but it did provide that extra layer of transparency that Lee's just talked about.
Did it hold things up, though? Does it slow things down? I mean, it mean that we're going to be in a situation, post-COVID, where we're trying to get things moving, we're trying to cut that red tape, the beige tape, the green tape? Is it going to be held up?
I think we'd rather cut red and beige and green tape from government departments and approvals processes than from legislation. I mean, this is a serious thing we're talking about here. The laws of the Northern Territory that govern our territory and govern the people. If we want to cut red tape, let's cut it out of approvals processes. Let's cut it out of exploration licences. Let's cut it out of the areas that matter, but not out of our parliament. It did not delay things.
Farsi, are you guys just being dodgy here? What's the go?
Yes. So, Katie, for 38 years, the Northern Territory Parliament had a process. We tried something different. We had a very different makeup in the last assembly. What we've said is, going forward, we don't want that bureaucratic barricade there. For example, a piece of legislation can be introduced in November, goes to a scrutiny committee in February, and you don't pass it till March. We need to be agile.
You
we need to be responsive.
You pass things on urgency, though, can't you?
Right, which you have done.
It's I didn't know that loved the screening committee so much, Katie, but what we're saying
running
is that
running out of excuses is what I'm hearing.
What about question time? Why did you change that?
Yeah.
So what, Katie, from our perspective around the legislation, we still believe there's the mechanisms for scrutiny. It can still go to a committee stage. It can still have an exposure draft bill. It still goes through the robust parliamentary process.
But it would do that as well as the legislative scrutiny committee. That's the thing. I mean, it's a nonsense. Natasha, in her speech in 2016 or 17, supporting the committee, said, this
wonderful
will,
they
she
were.
Said it would,
what a great
this is their government future-proofing
the
committees. Future-proofing committees.
Was it your idea, Fawzi?
Well, they're not future-proof. They're gone.
She embraced it.
They all did.
In terms of legislation,
singing from the rafters
as I pointed,
about how wonderful it was.
Not anymore.
As I pointed out, a large part
of
the legislation,
running shoes on.
90% of it just goes through with no comment. And we need to be responsive. We need to put in place measures.
No.
There is still the appropriate scrutiny, as I've just pointed out.
I don't
out
accept
through.
That 90% figure
well,
you're
but,
quoting
you know,
out,
for
quite
me,
frankly.
Look, as a journalist, for me, what I wonder is what is the 10% that had to change? And that's, I think, the big question is that
right.
when you can talk about 10% as being like this small amount, but you go, well, hang on a second, 10% is actually fairly really significant when you're talking about legislation and law.
But in the last annual report of the Social Policy Scrutiny Committee, it says that 89% of the recommendations made by that committee were basically accepted by government. Mm. So that means that the work that that policy scrutiny committee did was very important and very effective.
Very effective.
Now, I guess the thing is, this may have gone through to the keeper had there not been another couple of things that happened throughout the week, which made me, another thing in particular that made me question the transparency of the government. And that was the fact that, very obviously regular on this show, Matt Cunningham from Sky News, who writes regularly for the Northern Territory News as well, basically had put in an FOI request to find out more detail about how much it was going to cost to go into the renewable energy target that the Northern Territory government has got. There was a report into this space. Now, 118-page report into renewable energy obviously is how big this report was. Only problem was that that Matt got the report back as part of that FOI. 116 of those pages had been redacted. I mean, like, to me, that's... Why bother?
Blacked they out. Just left the front page, I think. They just gave
116
the
black pages. I saw it.
A $200,000 report and Territorians aren't allowed to have a look at it. I mean, why did they bother giving it back to him all blacked
they
out like that?
They didn't charge him.
Well, I didn't know you were interested in renewables, Leah.
That's unbelievable.
I'm interested in renewables.
One of the issues that then Matt raised as well on the show yesterday was he wondered whether it had actually come back and that they'd, gone to the effort of it coming back, even though 116 pages had been redacted, so that then they're able to sort of, reach a quota where it's like, okay, well, we've filled out X number of FOIs throughout the year. And you go, well, what's the point in actually putting in an FOI if you don't actually get any information at all? And isn't renewables, isn't this supposed to be a good news story? Isn't the fact that the government's going 50% renewables by 2030 supposed to be a good news story? Now, that makes me question whether it is if 116 pages of a report's been redacted.
So, Katie, on that report, we have Freedom of Information, which is a piece of legislation. We have offices within agencies that assess that against the legislation. There is mechanisms for people, if they dispute what they've been provided, to go through. My understanding is that particular document is commercial in confidence. But when you talk about renewables, last night we saw Sam McMahon, renewables are the dull bludgers of the energy mix, the great hoax perpetrated by the industry of the gullible. Well, that's the CLP's view. But in terms of this I've clearly outlined against the legislation, but as a government, we're absolutely committed to it and we're putting those programs in place.
And look, I don't disagree with that. In fact, I think it's really important for us to go down the renewables path. However, I think as every Territorian, including myself, we deserve to know how much it's going to cost.
That's right.
And Katie, we've only got... Sorry.
They can't come at the expense of affordability, reliability and stability of our electricity
networks. Do you agree with Sam's comments, Leah, that she made last night?
We very clearly want to see a renewable future for the Northern Territory.
So you don't believe in her comments?
As I said, it's got to come it's got to be reliable. It's got to continue to have reliability of our grid. It's got to be stable so that people like the blackout in Alice Springs last year. And it's got to be affordable.
Because if people support her comments or not, Leah?
Look, the senator is entitled to
so the dull bludgers of the energy system.
This is about scrutiny of your government.
No,
don't turn this around on me. You just provided a journalist an 116-page report with 114 of the pages black.
And I've just explained that's unbelievable. But we've got our roadmap to renewables. Your
How are you going to achieve
night,
it? Is it going to increase
to
prices?
But your senator
is
last
it going
night,
to ensure stability of our grid? Are people in Alice Springs going to have a blackout again this summer? Can you guarantee that that won't happen? What's happening with Ron Gooden? I mean, there's plenty of questions.
So, Natasha, will the government commit to actually being upfront and honest with Territorians about how much it's going to cost?
We've got our pathway clearly outlined in the roadmap to renewables.
So why not release the report to show people how much it's going to cost?
So, Katie, I've explained that report and the advice I've got that's
commercial in confidence. So how much is it going to cost for us to go renewable by 2030?
It's not a simple black and white figure of how much it's going to cost.
Why is there a report into it then?
So, Katie, that's a report that's commercial in confidence. That's one element. But we've got our roadmaps to renewables. which we've clearly outlined to Territorians, yet you've got the CLP who don't believe in renewables. You see comments like that from their senator. She made a comment last night against the Sun Cable project, which is backed by the federal government. Our pathway clearly shows we've got investments in the Darwin-Catherine battery so that we can stabilise the grid. There is a multitude of work to do, and you would understand this,
but
having
we've only got 10 years, Natasha. This is a blink of an eye.
But we lifted it, Robin, when you were the Treasurer. We cut renewables. You couldn't talk about climate change in the Department of Chief Minister. We've lifted renewables from 2% to 16% from 2016 to 2020.
What you're trying to achieve, but hiding information from the public is not a good place to start.
It's been a bad week for scrutiny and transparency. I mean, every single thing that's happened this week has been about you guys avoiding scrutiny. Now, I know you're terrified that the opposition now has 8 people, and you should be terrified. But coming in and slashing processes in the parliament, giving back FOIs that are just absolutely pointless is not a good move for your first stage of your government.
Look, for me, I just think it's incredibly important that people understand how much it's going to cost for us to get to that target of 50% renewables by 2030. I also think that it's really important for us all to understand if there is an impact on the power system in terms of going renewables, what additional work needs to happen to be able to support going renewables. Now, you mentioned that I've worked for Power and Water, and I have. I understand that there's vulnerability within the system, and we saw that in Alice Springs, and very clearly pointed out in the Utilities Commissioner's report was the fact that the solar and there being that cloud, which obviously impacted the solar, had a huge impact then on the whole system, and we saw a significant outage for quite a significant period of time. This is why I think it's really important for people to have a good understanding of exactly, you know, what work needs to go on behind the scenes,
but
and
Katie,
how much it's going to cost.
In the roadmaps for
it hasn't, Natasha. I'd interviewed the previous minister, Dale Wakefield, on this, and there was some really specific questions that I'd asked that she could not answer. And you know, I think that this goes to the heart of that FOI request being put in, of us being able to try and work out exactly how it's all going to happen, and then for 116 pages to come back redacted. What it sort of makes people think, rightly or wrongly, is, what is there something to hide?
I think it is about money, Katie. It is absolutely about money. I went to a briefing in Alice Springs conducted or facilitated by a new group called the Inshalem, which is funded by the Northern Territory Government and the federal government. And they told the group that gathered a few weeks ago that in order to reach the target of a 50% reduction in emissions by 2030 for Alice Springs, every single household in Alice Springs will have to have PV or solar panels on the roof. Now, I worked out there's 1,200 public dwellings in Alice Springs, and the minimum cost of installing solar on all those public houses will be around $10,000 per dwelling. So you're talking, in Alice Springs alone, millions and millions of dollars to get to that point where everyone is generating solar energy onto the grid. So it is going to cost a fortune, and I suspect that 116 redacted pages in this report is about the cost.
So, and Robin, it's net zero carbon emissions by 2050. It's 50% renewables by 2030. Two quite different things.
It's not just about the cost. It's also about reliability. So, you know, when your solar panels are working, that's great. But when the sun goes down or the cloud comes over or there's a rainstorm, you've got to have some other source of power, and that's where the gas generation is critically important, and that's why.
And that's a good point of difference between us and the CLP.
Well, how are you going to make a new sun and put it up there when the cloud goes? I mean, what?
I do want to ask, though, very quickly, what exactly was it that the senator said?
So last night she Facebooked, renewables are the dull bludgers of the energy mix. They are the great hoax perpetrated by the industry of the gullible. Yet this Gunner government thinks it's a great idea to take up huge tracts of productive land, build a solar farm of non-recyclable panels, the size of which the world has never seen, in an area that is totally hostile to solar panel efficiency, and run an extension cord to Singapore. If you think that's a good idea, I have a small block of land with awesome views on Jupiter. I'm prepared to sell you at a great price. She just came out and bagged the project, the Sun Cable project.
Well, there's a school of thought that says that this is not going to work.
By the federal government.
Look, you know.
So that's what was the astounding same thing.
I think people are starting to realise that this whole sun cable thing may not work.
Are the dog blood just
it has
the
never
mix.
Been done before. 3,500 kilometres of cable from Australia. 4,500 kilometres of cable between Australia and Singapore. It's never been done before.
My concern with sun cable is not the sun cable so much itself, but the fact that the government is so doggedly pursuing it. I'm worried they're putting all its eggs in one basket and overlooking the amazing mining and gas and other opportunities we literally have at our feet right now. Because no matter which way you skin that cat, sun cable's years away, but we've got mines ready to go right
Leah,
now.
Do you support the senator's comments?
Our fear of resources.
Like I said, the senator is running. Thanks, Tash. The senator's runs federal issues, and that's
but this is a project
important.
That's backed by the federal government.
She's a passionate politician.
Oh. She is. She's very passionate.
Yes or no? Do you support? Yes or no?
Come
on, you've been giving me a hard time all morning.
I support her cynicism and skepticism.
All right, support.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
It is just 10 minutes away from 10 o'clock and there's still plenty to cover off on this morning. It is The Week That Was. Robin Lamley, Leah Finocchiaro and Natasha Files in the studio with me. Now, Robin, Territory Alliance this week. Well, first, we spoke to you, I think it was Wednesday morning, about 9:30. You're still a member of Territory Alliance. By about 11 o'clock, you weren't.
The question is, did they get rid of her or did she quit? Yeah. I mean, that was the big question of the week.
You did not convince me at all that
you wanted to stay part of the party. Well, I've been trying to convince myself for months. I committed to staying with Territory Alliance for 6 months. I said, look, in respect to the people that have committed so much to Territory Alliance, as a courtesy, I will hang around for 6 months. But every day that passed, it became very, very difficult. Yeah. So when the information was released to the media by Daniel Kelly on, when was it, Wednesday morning?
Yep.
Great, I'm out of here.
Well, and then he was quite scathing of Terry Mills. He also said that he didn't particularly, that right from the start, he didn't entirely want you part of the party.
This is all a revelation to me, Katie. He's never spoken to me about any of this. It was bizarre. and I haven't read his letter. I just saw it as a great opportunity. The door was open and I just rushed through as quick as
but
I could.
But Territory Alliance is bizarre. It has always been bizarre. And Territorians at the last election sent them a very clear message that their menagerie model of lack of ideology and position on anything is not good for governance. So I think they need to do some serious soul searching and take a good hard look at what it is they actually are trying to be, but it's clearly not what Territorians
want.
Can
they even survive this, do you think, Robin?
No, I don't think so. I think what Daniel did on Wednesday was just silly. It really put the final nail in the coffin. Not that it needed it, really. I think it was probably already there, but it was an experiment, I think we all got on board. Lots of really, really good people got on board with Territory Alliance, and I'd like to acknowledge them this morning. Really decent human beings, clever people, people from all walks of life invested heavily in trying to get an alternative party up and running, and it failed. It was a flop.
Are you going to stay independent or are you going to join Leah in the
CLP?
Yeah,
that was my question. So during the week, these two were talking and I said, Robin, join. And you were like basically saying Leah wouldn't have you.
I heard you say that. I often look at Leah fondly. She's a superstar.
Like, thank you, Robin. We've become like, what's that counselling show?
I admire Dr. her. As I look at you fondly, Natasha.
Far out.
Well, never say never. But look,
never say never.
Well, who would say never in politics? It's a stupid thing to say to start.
I can say something. I will never join the CLP.
Natasha Files, if you sort out the problems in Alice Springs, I might consider joining the Labor Party.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
You get
come
around,
and sort
Robin.
Out the problems. Come and invest
goodness
in our
me.
Town.
Goodness me.
Sorry, Katie.
Well, I tell you what, it has. It's been a very big week. There's no doubt about it.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
Well, we have only got a couple of minutes left on the show. I do just want to touch on, though, the Territory's net debt has hit $5.7 billion last financial year. It is being reported it's about $150 million less than what was previously forecast. The Chief Minister and Treasurer last night tabled his annual financial report, which outlines the difference between between the mid-year report published in November and also those actual figures. I guess we won't really know exactly how things are tracking until November, the next parliamentary sittings, isn't it? That the
budget
gets handed down. Yeah,
budget comes down in November. Territorians are obviously very eager to see this. Of course, we've seen the Gunner government use the cover of COVID not to deliver a budget, not to deliver a mini budget, not to deliver any costings prior to the election. Of course, the state of our budget is hugely concerning because that affects our ability to deliver services, and that's why it's so important. You know, some people sort of say, oh, you know, $5.7 billion debt, what is that? It's such a huge number, you can't imagine how it impacts you.
Yeah.
But how it impacts you is that, you know, the government's borrowing $4 million a day just to pay the public service and keep the lights on.
And the public service is ballooned by the look of things. Still
well,
gone up.
Isn't that
That's exactly right. So the Gunner government need a serious plan here on how they're going to address this, because ultimately what that means is you can't, you know, deliver health services, you can't expand policing, you can't, you know, some of these fundamentals start to come under threat when you don't have any money to do what's needed. And that's what's so important about the budget. So when Territorians think about this figure, they really need to think about how it's going to impact them long term, because if this government doesn't outline a plan, we're not going to be able to do much into the future.
Unfortunately, we are going to have to wrap up. We've got to head across to the national news. Robin Lamley, the member for Araloon,
great to have you
on the show this morning.
Heaps of fun.
Talk to you again very soon.
Thank you.
Leah Finocchiaro, opposition leader, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you. And I have to shout out to all the parents who deal with Book Week. Today was my first Book Week morning. I had the body paint out. I had the hair chalk out. And it was really intense and stressful. So I just have a newfound respect for all the parents who've been Book Weeking for years. My total respect to you.
Well, they'll give you the tip, Leah. Just send them in their sports uniform.
Yeah, that's what I did today at our.
I dressed Isla up as that unicorn in the book.
Thelma.
That's the rainbow. No, the rainbow unicorn, and she does a rainbow poo. Oh.
Local book kick with
I didn't Lily. Send Isla with rainbow poo, though, just
so in case you're wondering.
Katie, local book kick with my left foot, Paul Seedon. They just wear their footy uniform. And talking about Tigers tonight, tomorrow.
You'll be dancing with the celebrities tomorrow.
Yes, and me and Greg.
Yes,
and a few others. We're dancing in the Total Recreation Celebrity
Dance. You should be great at dancing, Tash, because I've never seen anyone dance around a question like you do. Say.
All right, I might have to come just to watch. We better wrap up. Good on you all. Thanks so much for joining us this morning for the week that was proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions.